roost in the pasture, run them in the pen, work them on the Sunday, do it all again. Race them in the sand, buck them in the mud, drip a cowboy's sweat, bleed a cowboy's blood.
I'm Zeke Thurston, 2016 World Champion Saddlebrock Rider, and you're watching the Peppert Stewart Show.
That's what he said, and that's what you're doing. Why you're doing it, I don't know. That's on you. A lot of stuff's happened since we last visited. I guess you paid attention to the World's Championship Rodeo Women's event that happened right down the road, along with the PBR Finals that happened as well. If you caught Brock on here last week, headed over there, he kicked off round one, led for a while, kind of faded, but, you know, he got some roads, so that was a good deal for him, all the way from Canada, so that was a good deal for him. He had the women's rodeo breaking records over there, a great deal for the women's rodeo, you know, giving them more opportunities to compete other than run around in circles, so that's good for them. A lot of stuff today. There's another event, another big event's going to happen right down the street, and that's in Mesquite, Texas, at Mesquite Rodeo. We're going to get into that here in a minute. You've got the National Finals Rodeo still coming up over in the barbecue grill of Globe Life. Is it Globe Life Field or Globe Life Stadium? But you got one on one side of the street, one on the other. One's a field, one's a park. Whichever one is enclosed, it looks like a barbecue grill, the open. That's where it's going to happen. So the NFR is coming up there. There's a lot of rumors kicking around. What's going to happen over there? We don't know, but we'll let you know before it happens. We got some stuff going down today. Some good odd news for you. Some crazy stuff happening. I don't know why people are still obsessed. I know back in the old days, you used to go to the library and get out a book. And people are like, books? What is that? What do you even mean book? How do you Google that? No, it was a book. There used to be a book that came out every year of the Guinness Book of World Records. They're still doing it. There's still people out there that are wanting to break records and be in that book, which I don't know why you want to do that. It's 2020. You have the internet and Photoshop. You can make it happen real quick. So anyway, there's some more stuff happening. Those always surprise me about the odd stuff that people do to want to get into the Guinness Book of World Records. We're going to take a peek over in France. Some stuff's going on in France. We're going to tell you about that. You might want to know if your kid's going to school. And your cats travel. Your cat can travel. Sometimes they go a long way. I may touch on some crazy horse laws. I know you guys are tearing them up on social media. I may throw a few at you today. We will see. The new Cowboys documentary, Cowboys, was released yesterday. And we're going to talk to the filmmakers that made that happen. We're going to visit with those today. And I don't know what you're watching on the internet. I don't know what you're watching. If you're watching The Mandalorian, it's on Disney. It's a space show. I got stuck watching it because they were watching it at the house. And it just seemed real odd to me watching it that it reminded me a lot of the old Clint Eastwood movies, the old Man with No Name movies and the Clint Eastwood, the cadence, kind of what was going on. So I thought it was weird. Well, anyway, come to find out, that's what it is. It's kind of a space version of the Man with No Name series that Clint Eastwood did back in the day, the old spaghetti westerns. The music is the same music from those. They just sped them up or slowed them down. So if the music sounds kind of off and then the cadence, that's what it is. So if you hadn't watched that on Disney Plus, check that out. There's another movie coming out on Disney Plus we're going to throw at you today. Also, Yellowstone coming up on the 21st. If you missed any of it on Paramount Network, they're going to air every single episode the whole day. So set your DVR and go watch it. The Carity Foundation, some of the Yellowstone cast will be at Carity, the Carity Celebrity Cutting Event, again, December the 4th. Some of the cast members will be there again. We will be there, too, for that, getting you guys some more interviews and footage from that deal. Now, the Carity Foundation is not going to have the dinner and the concert again this year. They're not doing that. The Corona time restrictions, so they can't do it, but they will have the cutting event, and they're still going to have the auctions. They're still working out details on the live auction, But the silent auction, they've already got some stuff listed on there. So you can go to Carity Foundation on the internet, Google it, find it. Click on the celebrity cutting and you click on the auction. You can go on there and bid on stuff on the silent auction right now, or you can click on donate and send. Just send $5, $5, $2, a dollar, don't matter. Whatever you send helps, because even though the event's going to be a little different, the cancer patients that they take care of, nothing's going to change for them. You know, it's the same every day. So whatever you do to help them out. And if you're a big time Yellowstone fan, I will let you know that again this year, they're going to have some Yellowstone stuff. They've got some posters on there posted already, some posters from Yellowstone. There's some baseball caps that are autographed by a lot of the cast on there. And I think the bid yesterday was like $20. So you can get in on that and get you some Yellowstone merchandise. What else do we have? Cat in the Box, told you about that. Fort Worth, Texas. Something else happened. Sports are always happening over there, and something else happened too. I'm not sure how this works, because I've heard of it before. I've never really watched it. I just know that it's kind of like soccer with sticks and golf balls. That's all I know. But I'm sure I'm going to find out more. And that's because the Panther City Lacrosse Club is in Fort Worth, Texas. Announced yesterday, there's a new sports team, professional sports team, landing in Fort Worth, Texas, and that is the Panther City Lacrosse Club. As the, National Lacrosse League is the name of the league, I guess, kind of like NFL, what's the NLL. This is the 14th franchise by team president and CEO, Greg Bibb. They're going to be playing inside the Dickies Arena in Fort Worth, Texas. They will start playing in November of 2021. That's a long time from now. 2021-2022 season will happen over there. They're telling you now. They're telling you now, so you go buy tickets. If you want to buy tickets for next year, that's fine. I guess you can do that. You can purchase tickets right now at their website, PantherCityLAX.com. That's the Panther City Lacrosse Club merchandise. Go buy some merchandise, and if you remember, by the time November gets here next year, you can go watch it, see what happens. But I don't know, it seemed interesting. It seemed like an interesting deal. We've got a group for you guys, a band to tell you about from the North Texas area, I'm guessing, because it's their authentic Red Dirt Rebellion Americana grunge country. That's how you describe them. It's the Whiskey Hat Band. You can look them up at whiskeyhatband.com. Their musical influences span from decades because it's all generations. And the folks writing these songs for you are from Texas, California, and Nebraska. So you got a wide range of talent right there that span from young to old. And they've got a new song out called On the Road. We're going to let you check that out. And when we come back, we're going to talk about rodeo time in Mesquite, Texas.
Escape on the road.
All right, so we did tell you about Mesquite, Texas. Something's going to happen. There's going to be a rodeo at the Mesquite Rodeo. And you're like, what are you talking about? Really? They're going to have rodeo at Mesquite Rodeo? Yes, they're going to do that. But it's going to be invaded by the miniature bull riders. They're going to be there having their world finals. I know a little bit about it, but not enough. So we brought in some folks that know more than me. And that right there is Kevin Woods, Brandon Wren, all the way from far out of Dallas to tell you guys about Mesquite Rodeo.
That's right, guys. We're excited to be here. It's called the International Miniature Bull Riding Association. We've got all kinds of great events coming up. It's going to kick off the 8th through the 12th right there at Mesquite, 9:30 every single morning. I'm the vice president. Kev is the president of the association. We've got some of the top kids you've seen on TV. You've seen them all across the country.
Coming from all over the world. There's some kids coming from Canada, Mexico. A little bit limited this year because of COVID, but we're getting it done and making it. Mesquite's working with us really good. The city and the people are just very hospitable. I mean, they have been very nice to us, and we're getting it all worked out, even with these COVID regulations and stuff, and it's going to be a great finals.
For sure. It's going to be really fun. Right now, we got a little over 260 contestants going to be there, a handful of days. We'll crown world champions on Saturday. There'll be a watch party every single night. There's a kids' zone, family-friendly entertainment. It's during the last few go-arounds of the National Finals Rodeo, of course, right up the road at Arlington. So we invite you guys to come out and just be a part of it. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah. So when they come out, what can they expect as far as, because you got a lot of people that are watching that are watching the news and seeing what's going on. And so, you know, what are you guys going to do at Mesquite that's going to kind of, you know, help the fan, you know, the fans want to come, they want to come watch, to feel a bit more comfortable about coming out, you know, as far as all the corona restrictions and the guidelines and everything. So what are you guys doing to kind of, you know, keep everybody safe on that deal?
We are going to have, there is sanitized stations set up all across the arena. There will be social distancing, of course. I believe Texas is at 75% capacity, so we will not go over that. So you will be able to social distance and do everything like that. Of course, wear a mask. We encourage that, to wear a mask and wash your hands.
Yes, sir.
So with these kids, about how many kids do you have coming? As far as when people ask, you know, the miniature bull riders, they say it's the kids, but a lot of people always ask, you know, what are the age groups, what are the age ranges, what are the, you know, is there weight requirements, and, you know, how all that works for the kids that are learning to ride bulls and do miniature bull riding to progress up. You know, how does it start? What are your age groups, and how does that work for the kids?
Yeah, Pepper, we are a miniature bull riding association, but the miniatures is primarily from 14 years under. We have 6 age groups total. We do buck the older kids with the bigger bulls. They're not all miniatures, but we have a 5 and under, which is the walk and trot. That's the little bitty kids, man. They're the cutest thing you ever seen. Them little bulls just walk out through their trot, and them kids think they're the biggest PBR star in the world, you know. And then you move on right on up to the peewees, and it's 6 to 8 years old, and that's where them kids really start getting riding. Of course, we don't put them on the rankest bulls in the world, but they're size appropriate and or skill level for them. But they come out and they buck pretty good. Them little kids, 6 to 8, will surprise you as well. They'll ride some of the rank little dudes, you know. Then you move right on up to the junior minis, which will be 9 to 11. And that's where the action starts happening right there, guys. Them kids are talented. They work their butts off to get to this finals. They ride their hearts out every weekend, and them parents burn the roads up hauling them around to get them qualified. Those being a little bit ranker. Then you move right on up to the 12 and 14 year old age group. There's another step up, guys, and that's where the bulls really start turning back. They're still miniature, but if you didn't know and didn't size comparison, you'd think they're a PBR bull. I mean, they buck good. They're going to turn back, and those kids are very, very talented athletes. Jump right on up into the older kids, the 15 to 16 year old age group, and they're going to be riding big bulls. Now, they're age appropriate still. We want to take care of them. We want to grow them and keep them healthy, but they're going to get on some big bulls. And in that age group right now, you would not believe the talents that's coming in that. You got Caden Bunch, Cutter Kaler, Canyon Bass, some of the top kids that are going down and winning these open rodeos all over Texas right now and all over everywhere. They're going and winning. So, and then we have another age group from 17 to 19 that step right on up there, just a little bit ranker. And we try to take care of them all. I want to keep them happy and help them have a good pro career when they go on, if they decide that's what they want to do.
All right. And then you got your kids and your age groups, and when they get out to Mesquite, the fans, if the fans want to go, how are they going to, you know, where do you get tickets? You buy tickets at the box office, you go online, Or how do you get out there to go watch this?
Tickets will only be available at the door, and it's only $10, guys, to get in to watch the performance. $10 a day. You know, we love to get them stands filled up. Them little kids love it when they look up there and them stands are full and people hollering for them. That just gets them jazzed up and ride. They ride a lot better. So it's going to be a lot of family fun. There's going to be a fun zone, as Brandon said. So all the little kids, even if you little kids' years, they're going to be able to play and have fun while they're there watching. Our performances will start at 9:30 every morning, and they'll run to approximately 1 or 2 o'clock in the evening. And then we'll come back that evening every night with a watch party at 6 o'clock, guys. We'll have some speakers there, and then they're going to fire up the NFR on the big screen there when it's played on TV. And we're going to kick back and have a little entertainment and sit back and relax and watch the NFR, and the kids can play and have a grand old time.
And the public's invited to come out to the watch parties as well. At 6 o'clock every night, we'll give away awards, the go-around champions, and then watch the NFR every single night as well.
Okay, and as far as the fan zone you're going to set up out there, do you know kind of what's going to be out there or what they can look forward to when they come out for the fan zone?
There's going to be all kinds of games and stuff for the kids, the blow-up games. There'll be some cornhole tournaments, some rope and dummies, but also a lot of vendors. There'll be a lot of vendors set up as well. Yes. If you can't get all the way into Fort Worth and get some shopping done, you can get some Christmas shopping done there as well. We got everybody from boutiques to custom knives to you name it. They're going to be there set up as well. So not only are you going to get the shopping experience, the fan zone experience, and if you come back that night, you'll get to watch the NFL right there for free right there inside Mesquite Arena.
Yep. Mechanical bull. Lots of stuff will be happening. There'll be something for everybody.
All right. Now, what if somebody's out there watching, they've got a kid that's been out there, they've been riding some sheep and getting on a calf here or there, and they look at, you know, what you guys are doing and say, hey, looks interesting. I want to find more about that. You know, where do they go to learn more about the association or how to become part of it?
Yes, sir. We love that. I mean, we hope everybody does. Look us up. You can look us up on our website, International Miniature Bull Riders Association.com, or go on our Facebook page, International Miniature Bull Riders Association. You can message us. Our phone number and info is on there, website and Facebook. Give us a call. We've got contractors all over from pretty much everywhere in the United States and Australia, Canada, Europe, Mexico, and we're even getting some kids from Brazil this next year. They wanted to come this year, but the COVID shut that down pretty fast. So it's growing really, really fast, and it's a fun thing. We really enjoy taking care of the kids and meeting them and keeping them on appropriate stock and everything. And it's not only that, these kids are competitive, man. These parents drive their wheels off their car to haul them around. We give away over $75,000 at our finals last year in Vegas, and we hope that the numbers are a little bit lower this year because of COVID, but the money's going to be pretty darn close to that again. So not only are they're riding and champions, they're actually winning some good money.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, if you want to make your way out to Mesquite Championship Rodeo and check out the miniature bull riding finals out there, like I said, from December 8th through the 12th, 9:30 in the morning, go out there, watch the rodeo, watch the kids, hang out, watch the NFR, have a good time, do some shopping, see the fan zone. It's going to be a great time. So go check it out. And, you know, guys, we appreciate you coming in and visiting with us and letting us know what's going on over there. And we'll see if some folks want to check it out.
Always a blessing coming over here, hanging out with you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
It's a life. It's a desire out here that not everybody has or understand or will ever understand.
Cowboying to me, it just seemed like if I didn't do it anymore that, you know, something would be gone. Cowboys know what you do. It's who you are, you know. It's just something in you.
It's rough. Pay is low. Houses are rough. The hours are long. And there's isolation, and it doesn't work for everybody.
My husband said, I've always been a cowboy. I've never done nothing but be a cowboy. You know, the money isn't important. I'm a cowboy. And I said, okay.
There'll be younger guys that come out and make it for a little while, and then they just can't take the isolation. And it don't take long once they get out here to know if they're going to make it or not.
They've been taught talking about the cowboy dying for 100 years. But that same old-time spirit is still in them. And it always will be.
And that trailer right there is what we're talking about earlier today. It's called Cowboys, a documentary portrait about cowboys. It was filmed across the U.S. and a few different of the bigger ranches. They went from Arizona to Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Nevada, Oregon, of course Texas, because you can't make a documentary about cowboys and not be in Texas. So, you know, the trailer come out. We've seen the trailer. Said, man, this is a great. This looks really good. It released, I believe, in the U.S. or maybe even worldwide yesterday on the 17th. It's out there. You can watch it on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play TV, Venmo On Demand, Blu-ray, and DVD for the old school like me, which I still put in DVDs into the DVD player. I just do that. It's more authentic of watching a movie than sticking in there, just hitting, you know, download it. But anyway, that's the sign of the times. And with the sign of the times in 2020 during Corona time, we've got the folks that made that happen. So if you enjoyed that, you want to check it out, we're going to find out more about it. And with that, we're going to do it right now, right here with me. I've got Bud, John, and Faley on with us on the interweb net. And guys, tell us about this, documentary that you did and kind of how it came to be.
Well, yeah, it's
and I'll tell you what's real authentic is VHS. That's whenever you know it's absolutely legit.
I've still got a bunch of those.
I do too, and even more so Betamax, I suppose. Man, this project started 5 years ago in Spicewood, Texas. I'd been wanting to make a documentary for about 10 years about working cowboys, and talked to my wife one day. I'd been a filmmaker for about 10 years and talked to my wife and said, you know, let's make it happen. Let's get started. And so I reached out to old Tom Morehouse. He's a legendary cowpuncher here in Texas. And Tom said, yeah, I'd love to be part of a project like that. Why don't you come on out to the ranch? Built an initial trailer and a website and kind of put the building blocks together. Well, about that time, I'd taken out an office in town, and the guy next to me just happened to be this cowboy photographer and attorney named John Langmore. Well, I met him, and he had spent the previous 4 or 5 years out on several big ranches photographing for his book, Open Range, that's out now. And he'd also cowboyed on ranches out west since he was a kid. I eventually told him my idea and said, hey, do you want to partner up? And John said, sure, you know, let's figure out what we can do. And so we went out to a few ranches and created a 6-minute teaser that we put out on social media 3 years ago, I believe. And people started watching it, and Faley saw it online and reached out and said, hey, I'd like to be part of this project too. How can I be involved? And we needed a creative producer and someone to bring other conceptual aspects to the film. So Faley came on board, and we got rocking and rolling filming for the next 2 years, and filmed in 10 states on 8 big outfits. Eventually hired editor Lucas Harder, an Emmy Award winning editor out of St. Louis, Missouri. He signed on to our crew, and we worked with him for a year, and then had the film score custom composed by Ian McLeod out of Washington, D.C. He and I had been working for several years, and he brought on his team of musicians and composed our score until we eventually premiered the film last October at the Austin Film Festival. And then we've screened it theatrically at film festivals and events this past year until COVID hit. And then now we're, like you said, just released the film internationally yesterday, November 17th, on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Apple TV, and Vimeo On Demand, in addition to Horse TV, for subscribers to that network and an international broadcaster as well.
Okay. And what kind of feedback when you do these screenings, what kind of feedback are you getting from the audience?
It's all positive. Everything that we've heard personally thus far has been positive. I was just looking at some reviews on Amazon right before we hopped on the show, and they were positive as well. So far, well, to back up, our primary audience was the working cowboy. We wanted to create an authentic documentary about the working cowboy. And unless the cowboys in the bunkhouse could appreciate and feel like this film was authentic, unless they felt that way, then everything else was irrelevant. That said, we hope this film resonates both with that crowd and also maybe someone in Manhattan who has no idea where their beef comes from. And the response from both of those demographics and everything in between has really been phenomenal to us. We've had a number of working cowboys come up and say, hey, you guys hit the nail on the head. We've had folks whose grandfather was a cowboy and said this film was so touching to us. We've had folks come up who have no idea about beef production and have never been involved in agriculture or cowboying in any manner say, hey, I didn't know this existed, and I thought this culture didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And now I do.
All right. And John, with your photography and things, what was it like, you know, for you to go out and shoot and do photography and then kind of bring what you see on still shots to help bring into a screen?
Yeah, Pepper. So I worked on a book for 4 years before this. I cowboyed as a kid for 12 summers on a lot of the same places that are featured in the film. And then I had spent, as Bud mentioned, 4 years before he and I partnered on the film, working on a book on these same big outfit working cowboys. So I had, you know, I went to most of the ranches for 10 days apiece to photograph when I was working on the book. And that was about the same amount of time that we stayed on most of these places when we were filming. So, I played a dual role of a director during the making of the film and then also working on the still photography. So, I don't think we fully appreciated how the still photography, you know, would work itself into the film, although Bud had used it in the teaser originally and kind of rolled over into the whole film. But, you know, it's a moment like with that still photography, it's a chance to slow down and reflect, and you just have a different relationship with still photography than you do with moving images. And kind of the same with the poetry. And, you know, as Lucas, our editor, had a big hand to play in terms of, you know, this is a spot where people need to slow down and reflect, and, you know, and then the selection of the images needed to, you know, relate to the mood of what people just watch and what's going to come next. And but yeah, it's you know, I think it just makes for a more pensive film. And, you know, honestly, the cowboy world is, you know, they're a lot more thoughtful and reflective about what they do and what their lives mean than is kind of commonly portrayed in Westerns, where they're all men of action, you know, roping and riding and, you know, whipping and spurring. And I think, you know, still photography lends itself.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, and when you go through and you're shooting your photos and you got the photography and you got the still aspect of, you know, the ranch work, but then be able to see, you know, those pictures in motion just kind of, you know, brings all that together. It seems, you know, on a screen, like you say, for those that don't really understand the full aspect of what's taking place there on the ranch, I think, you know, it kind of combines together to give that full picture of what's really taking place.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I, you know, like my book, it's, you have a totally different relationship with the imagery going through a book. You know, it's slow and methodical and you stop and you reflect and, you know, motion picture washes over you. You know, it's a much more immersive than it is in, you know, intellectual type of experience. And so it's really nice to be able to put both into the film. And, you know, the audiences obviously are the judge of whether or not it works. And, but yeah, so it's nice to have both in there. I think it makes for a very different experience.
It's a multimedia movie, you know, and cowboys have traditionally liked art or are artists themselves, whether that's how you train a horse or painting a picture or shooting a photograph or writing a poem. And, you know, most movies, of course, are specifically motion, and that's it. And we have motion in this, of course. We have aerial cinematography, but the juxtaposition of that paired with, like John said, taking the time to sit and read a poem and then see a scene in the film in motion and then see the exact same scene in the film later on in a black and white still photography that was captured on film, by the way, not digitally. It's a very nice feeling, I think, for most people whenever they watch this, and it does force you to slow down almost like commas in a sentence and really think about what it is you just experienced.
And that's kind of the, you know, the gist of it when you see that, you know, and just from the trailer, I haven't seen it yet. Of course, it just came out yesterday. I haven't watched it yet, but just from watching, you know, that trailer, that's when I first seen the trailer and I was like, whoa, what in the world is this? I need to see what this is. I need to know what's going on with this. And that's, you know, when we reached out, I was like, hey, we want to know more about this because this looks like something that needs to be seen.
And I might just mention, for the sake of your viewers, Pepper, so they understand what the film is about. You know, it's about big outfit cowboys. So it's even like a subculture within the cowboy world. So it's not, you know, there are a lot of family ranches that are super authentic. You know, they're doing the same work as the folks on these big outfits. But these big outfits are kind of 250,000 acres to 1,000,000+ acres. And the main thing for us was that they ran a full crew of horseback cowboys. So they'll have kind of 10 to 20, normally men, but not always men. We talk about women as well. And I know Faye can add some, you know, background to the female aspect of the film. But, you know, they spend their lives a horseback. They don't, you know, unless they have a camp, everything they do is, you know, working cattle a horseback. So those are the ranches that we went to for the sake of the film. And really, you know, as we say in some intro lines, they're really the direct descendants of the trail driving cowboys of the 19th century. I mean, these are the working descendants, you know, in a professional sense, of that same group of people. They have the same kind of, you know, mentality. They're drawn to it for the same reasons, you know, just being left alone, living their whole days outdoor, nothing separating them from the sun and the stars other than a felt hat. So it's, you know, that's who is documented in the film.
All right. And speaking of Faye, you want to bring in, you know, kind of your aspect, your thoughts going along with this documentary?
Yes, Pepper. So my name is Faye Lee, and I am the creative producer of Cowboys. And as you can probably tell by my accent, I was born and raised in Northern Germany. I was always an equestrian, always a writer, always a book publisher. This is my second documentary. And I'm also a partner in 1922 Films with John and Bud. And I felt that behind every strong cowboy that we saw out there and on every ranch, you know, we also needed to take a closer look at this concept of family and women, people holding on to the land, people trying to carve out a living, and women in particular, how do they handle the isolation, the distance? You will find Jolynn in the film who talks about, you know, this spilled bag of sugar. So she is 4.5 hours from the closest grocery store one way. And so that means for her that if a bag of sugar spills in the truck, she's 9 hours from that. And if she has a child that wakes up in the middle of the night and has 104.2, you have to deal with it. And I think that was something that I admired tremendously, and that we wove these voices seamlessly into the film of the women. And what I'm most proud of is the women that we met and portrayed on these ranches are through and through feminine. They are not hard, they're not harsh, they're not bitter, but they have found a lifestyle that suits them. Most of them are relatively strong, yet feminine. And some of them are artists, you know, they are writers, or they're painters, or they braid and they weave. It was really remarkable for me to meet these women and also children, because, you know, there's kids that grow up on these vast ranches and they're all homeschooled. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole tapestry of our documentary.
Okay. And when you went into, you know, going into the documentary from the start and, you know, spending the time out there with these places and shooting and going through the footage and spending the hours and the days, was there anything that you had in mind when you started that you learned or realized, you know, later after production?
Pepper, is this question for me?
Anyone?
Bud, John?
Well, from a cinematography standpoint, we learned a lot on the road, but we definitely had a plan of action going into it. I'm not speaking about conceptually as far as the storyline, although we had a structured plan for that too, but I'm only speaking from more of a technical perspective as far as capturing the imagery itself. So our film crew at any given point in time was only three people. Myself, one of two alternating camera people who I would work with, and then John, of course, shooting the still photography. And we did everything ourselves. You know, we flew the drones, we ran the ground cameras, shot the stills, recorded the audio, set up the interviews, did the lighting, downloaded the footage each night, all of that within the three of us. And you can't really show up to these ranches easily with a crowd. And you certainly can't show up with a traditional film crew where you've got your audio tech and mm-hmm. your dedicated drone pilot and everything else. You want to show up and basically be as unassuming as possible and look at everything as a fly on the wall.
Right.
So there's no scenes in Cowboys that's staged outside of the interviews themselves, of course. Mm-hmm. We would just show up at specific times of year when we knew certain types of work were going on, for instance, branding in the spring, shipping in the fall, everything in between. And we would document for usually 5 to 10 days, whether we were on a wagon or filming someone pulling a calf. And we knew the way we wanted to capture the film going into it was in a relatively cinematic manner, in addition to the authenticity of everything. So we had two cameras rolling, one of those always rolling slow motion, or 90% of the time, and the other one rolling in regular speed with audio of the same scenes. So at the end of the day, once we got in with the editing suite, we had a massive amount of footage in which we could pair these two visually different elements, but of the same scene, and create a really nice manner of viewing the American West, which is by default an incredible, you know, palette to work off of anyways, just because of the wide vistas and what it is. And so taking all of that, trying to steep it in the authenticity of everything, show the grit in addition to the silhouettes in the morning, seemed to work out well. And what we ended up with was 175 hours of usable footage that we ended up cutting into this, you know, 80 plus minute film at the end of the day.
And that's a big undertaking for people that don't understand what that is. That's a lot, because, you know, when you go back, you get 175 hours, the editing, the footage, the cutting, the going through, and you want to get the right, you know, the right spots, the right looks for everything to fit together. And, you know, that's a huge undertaking to get that done. And, you know, we just want to say, we appreciate you guys hopping on and visiting with us and telling us a little bit about, you know, about the documentary and that it's out there and kind of where you guys came from and your thoughts and things on this. And we appreciate it, guys. And we wish you good luck on your, on your film, and I can't wait to see it.
Thank you, Pepper.
Thanks, Pepper.
Million thanks, Pepper.
Thank you. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Go check out the documentary. It is, if you're seeing this, then it is on the interweb net. You can go get it. Go download it, rent it, order the DVD, buy it, check it out. So ought to be sound like a good show. I for myself is going to do that and check it out. And speaking of checking it out, you know, on the interweb net and on the social medias and whatnot, those crazy videos go everywhere. And so I've been doing a bunch of the crazy horse laws, and people keep asking for more and more and more. So I'm going to give you one, just one. That's all you get. If you want to hear more, go to Pepper Stewart Show on Facebook and contact them there and be like, hey, where do I find this stuff? And then you will know. So anyway, one more for you. It is illegal in Marion, South Carolina. You're like, illegal? Yes, these are crazy horse laws that are still on the books that I bet you didn't know. So there in Marion, South Carolina, it is illegal to tickle a female under her chin with a feather to get her attention while she's riding a horse. Don't do it. You could go to jail. So speaking of stuff happening, Guinness, I told you about the Guinness records. Here we go. Why they thought of this, I don't know. But a guy in Idaho, you would think it'd be potatoes. An Idaho man breaks the Guinness World Record that he said turned out to be unexpectedly hazardous, and that was catching uncooked, unbroken eggs in his mouth. Now, if you on some of the on the TikTok videos, they do that with hot dogs. Ew. Have you seen that? But anyway, David Rush, who had broken more than 150 Guinness World Records to promote STEM education, said he took on the record for most eggs caught in the mouth in 1 minute with help from his neighbor, John. So he tossed eggs from a distance of 6.5 feet away, and then he set out to catch them in his mouth. His attempt featured 36 eggs thrown, 24 caught, 18 ending up broken. Rush said one of the eggs that broke cut his lip, but he decided to keep going. Busted lip, but I got to keep going. Hit me with them eggs. They can't stop. So he broke a record of 17. Now, I'm wondering about this because, for one, we never proofread these stupid stories. So my question is this. He broke a record for catching 18 eggs in his mouth without breaking them. But I thought that he caught 18 eggs in a row. I didn't know there's somebody just throwing them at him. Oh, that one broke. That's not a record. You just do it again and catch all 18 without breaking one. Then we'll talk about your records, unless you're a cat. Washington State couple's cat went on an incredible journey when it wandered into a shipping container and ended up at a Home Depot 25,000 miles away. Almost 25. About 2,000. Close enough. It went up in Alaska. It went from Washington to Alaska. So it may be 2,000 miles. Maybe a little edit issue here on this paper. But anyway, so let's say about 2,500 miles to Alaska. Their cat Tuxedo, or their Tuxedo cat, Panda, wandered away from their house. And they spent about a week looking for him in the neighborhood, trying to find him. Nobody could find him. Nobody knew where he went. Then they were shocked when a photo was posted to a Seattle Lost Pets group on Facebook, revealed Panda had turned up at a Home Depot in Kena. I guess it's Kena. I'm not from Alaska. I'm probably saying it wrong. Panda apparently hitched a ride in a mail truck or a similar vehicle, then ended up at a transit center in Washington, where he wandered into a shipping container bound for the Home Depot in Alaska. The employee of the store took the cat to the local vet, where he was given a microchip and received clearance to fly home. Oh, so he didn't have a microchip. Okay, they just recognized him. United Angels is a Washington State nonprofit that raises money for pets with medical emergencies and help coordinate Panda's flight home, provided free of charge by Grant Aviation. Good deal. Good deal. But now for our viewers in France, you're like, what do you mean France? Yes, people in France, they're watching right now. They do that. It's crazy the amount of countries that we end up in that are watching. I'm like, why are you? I don't know why people in the United States watch this show, much less anybody in France. But anyway, an elementary school in France put up a pair of posters outside the fence with an unusual request from the parents. Don't throw late students over the gate. I'm like, what? Yeah, this school in France had to put up signs outside the gate showing a cartoon of the parents chunking their kids over the fence. And the text said to the parents, do not throw your children over. Instead, wait for the gates to open again at 10 a.m. or 3 p.m. So I'm guessing over there, when the bell rings, the gates lock. So you're there. That's it. So I'm guessing they got probably a early morning bell that locks the gate. And I guess some kids rotate in and out at 10 and some more kids at 3, they leave. So anyway, stop throwing your kids over the fence. The principal had told the local news station that, yes, they literally throw their children over the gate when it's closed. They said there was only a few scattered incidents, no reports of serious injuries, but there was enough kids chunked over the fence that they had to put up a sign. Which you always wonder when you see a warning sign, what happened that needed this sign? You know, what were you doing? So I don't know. But anyway, get out there and check out streaming. We talked about The Mandalorian earlier. It's on Disney Plus. Disney Plus is releasing another show on Disney Plus that it's a reimagining. They don't say remake anymore. It's just a reimagining. We reimagined it this way, but I don't know which way because it's not out yet. So Black Beauty, it's a reimagining of Black Beauty from the Anna Sewell's 1877 novel in the same name. So you got an orphan teen who bonds with a Mustang, who she names Black Beauty. Of course, they forge an unbreakable bond that carries them through different chapters, challenges, and adventures of her life. And Kate Winslet. If you remember Kate Winslet from the Titanic, she wouldn't let him get on the board. She's like, no, get off my board, man. Well, anyway, she is going to be the voice of Black Beauty in this film. So check out this film. See what you think about that. And then also, don't forget to go to peppershirt.com, buy a t-shirt, buy something, because it's all for sale. But check out this trailer.
How's she doing?
She barely speaks to me.
I don't need your sympathy, Uncle Don.
That Mustang's got a real mean streak.
She's just angry. She was rounded up and taken away from her family.
What's her name?
I haven't given her a name yet.
I heard you lost your family, too. You really are beautiful. That's what I'll call you. Black Beauty. It's all we know.
Gotten closer to that filly in days than I have in weeks. They say horses pick you.
Thank you.
The rescues have a time limit.
You can't sell beauty. You're my family. You know that, right?
Watch it go. Watch it go. We stay
the same. I'm gonna find you. I promise.
And I don't.
She saved my life, you know?
How can a horse save a person?
If I fought for every horse I'd ever loved, I'd have 100 of them.
I don't want 100 horses. I just want one.